lot, whether it's black, white, native, is still growing at a rapid rate. And which tells me that there is some fraudulence in our structure, in our system, which we cannot no longer shelter and leave it for the banks and the corporate directors. The same conduct and the same potential for insider information of the insider running away with this type of a portfolio are still too great, thus leaving the citizen back in its original deplorable state. And when you impose a limitation such as to hold and to ascribe the portfolio to those capital producing infrastructure, that tells me that we are going to have status quo. That means that the very country, very state, who is probably in cahoots with its natural resources and has lost its managerial position because Cinemasca has lost its leasehold, is now have a different manager called Exxon Corporation or Standard Oil of Sohio, and who is not interested in how your community infrastructure gets developed, but whose vested interest is to ensure the political weakness of the capital producing infrastructure. And the experience of this model is demonstrated in the North Slope borough, that we should make conditions upon the state leases that no oil company, no U.S. corporation, or any other corporation go after the taxing authority of its municipality. And otherwise, that those that have the ability to be organized will always be mobilized to be organized. And thus leaves a great gap of poverty in Alaska, although that it was done in a fashion of public good. And the greatest weakness of our annual appropriations and the balancing is that under the disguise of public good, those that have always have the access to further reach the benefit. So, the nature of the plan, unlike any other state, the state of Alaska need not to lease its resources, but it can buy back and lease other land. The permanent fund, as I view it at this time, can be that holding company that state of Alaska has with for all of its citizens in a proprietary class, making all of its citizens capital to gain those benefits which the federal government is going to lease away anyway. And so the state of Alaska is in the business. The grand public fraud that has been committed by the public officials is self-denial by state of Alaska is in the business. We are in the business of oil and gas. Why have we denied the appropriate conduct of our and the necessary standard of care and conduct when the state legislature must have a proprietary relationship to all of the wealth that state of Alaska has? And the biggest problem of the past, that the state of Alaska has failed, state legislature has failed to realize, is that that we cannot get to the biggest bandit in town, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, who has the necessary technical infrastructure to give this resource away at the cheapest cost possible, and therefore create a thin layer of people and class who already have, and therefore makes socialism for the few possible, and make capitalism for the masses impossible. And how does one view its citizenship, or is that no longer a sacred thing to me? Have we substituted a managerial class and put our citizens in the back door? I feel it's very dangerous. And there are controls. And unless Alaska defines its community, what type of community that we are to have and who lives in that community, we are going to fail and still have this type of greater population dislocation. And once we develop an infrastructure where a citizen can always benefit, not in lieu of service, but in capital formation. And I feel that the time has come where we must look at basic definitions and to see if community-owned, citizens-based infrastructures can be developed, then the chances for fraud when one has parity and equal rights diminish. And where accountability, and to find when you are equal on paper, on statute, or in the Constitution, that the chances to find a basic violator are higher than the present format, than if you are administrating a public good, which you can get away with and rationalize that under the prior proposal, that the tomorrow had the best proposal, although that meant that it was bad, but it was still the best proposal, therefore that we had accepted a bad portfolio to start off with all of its structural problems, and because that somebody has made it, therefore that this type of public trust becomes socially respectable and correctable. And that the only way I feel that the state legislature must have a greater control upon the proprietary of this public resource and not making it into a class of public good where anybody in the governor's office, the governor and the chief executive of Alaska at this time is the largest single one-armed bandit in the state of Alaska. And I would not seek to give higher sanctions to the governor. I would highly recommend to the state legislature that they would vest a veto power. In those classes of proprietorship, of the management of all of the citizens' portfolios, the biggest problem that we have in the state is our chief executive does not know how to administer. Not only that, but we also have a place for the strongest tyrant in a democratic process to exist in Alaska, is the governorship of Alaska. That there is no governor in all the 50 states that has the powers that our governor has. It is amazing that the practitioners of that office have not totally given our state to the top 500, but it is. And I hear sounds that you must be Kidder be by stop to come in here and that the best experience is from the biggest voice, which I don't feel is the case. The best experience I know of and have always best in the people, that the proprietary of the fund must directly vest to the people, not to any managerial groups, and that none of the commissioners or the investors of this fund should not serve in any other capacity but for the fund to manage the portfolio of the citizens of this state. The chances of insider information, I say, is too high, too great. And the concept of the Alaskan Native, the Alaskan community must be clearly defined. Otherwise that instead of, I see, if your procedure becomes in a technocrat's hands, such as an investment portfolio from our biggest red apple, that the chances of that experience are equally great. And so, therefore, that I do not take the exception of a rule just because that a guy was successful in managing a portfolio in Peru, creating corporate value. I feel that same advisor is equally dangerous to state of Alaska, Milton, Sweden. And his experience is a classical one that one must not forget, that corporate fascism and corporate capitalism are the same when you have a very strong managerial elite running a portfolio. And so I would suggest to a permanent committee in the state legislature whereby the legislature and the governor achieve parity. Without that the fund will still go to those few and friendly few. Unless that the populace have the majority and have the control. I would have a majority of the citizens versus majority of managers. I do not trust humanity. That the conduct for legal managing is in the books has always been slapped. And by limiting to capital producing infrastructures in the state of Alaska, that means that Alaskans arbitrarily, capriciously have cut their nose off and say that I am now, that the Alaskan wealth has changed managers overnight, that it is no longer the permanent fund, it is now back to the top flight. Buying back, must buy back and must invest its wealth on federal lands instead of Alaska. We must be, that the permanent fund must be prepared to find more oil in the Outer Continental Shelf. And this, that it must make funds available necessary so that all of the citizens can grow with the development of our country. And if we cannot make the state of Alaska, as you well know, we've got the coastline. But the coastline has been auctioned out to the largest multinational corporations. Already. It is because that citizen has lost a proprietary relationship to that resource. It is because that the color is under public good, therefore that the citizen do not have a direct relationship, a primary relationship to that resource. And if we develop a proprietary class for the citizens of the state of Alaska in whatever development or in investment at this time, then I see the chances of saving ourselves to the maximum benefit of all of our citizens, not just those who have the ability to be organized. I am for controls. If the controls are to exclude citizens, as far as I am concerned, that is unconstitutional assault. A very direct violation. And access, and the citizens' access to this resource, I'd say, and the state legislature, proprietary control, not the governor. I would vest the proprietary of the fund in the state legislature and go fight the governor. And thus it would make administration checks and balances a lot easier than if I feel safer if Ernie had to say so on the permanent fund than Hannah himself.
Well, so would I. Hey, Charlie. Thanks. Can we ask you a question or two?
Sure.
You mentioned the Alaskan community, the kind of problems we have defining it. How do we define it in a way that should include everyone in the world?
The most significant development in defining community that is occurring throughout this world has occurred in Norway. The Norwegian government, at the time of development of North Sea, the Norwegian government took the lowest denomination of sovereignty in Norway and examined it. Lowest denominator of sovereignty and the best unit, administrative unit known to Western man has been family. And I'd say that it is high time in the state of Alaska that we attempt to actualizing ourselves what is the construction and the matrix of an Alaskan family and what it means. I see a chance for the first time to develop an actuarial analysis of what constitutes an Alaskan family in the state. And to arrive at parity. Instead of Alaska is to remain intact, that its citizens must have parity. And the citizens of the state of Alaska should only accept parity, not dislocation. And this means parity in construction, parity in service, which means it may cost more. It may appear to cost more, but in the long run, if you have parity, it has a higher survival rate. And the basic needs and the basic expenditures which we are going to have is still going to be energy. You know, we already know what those basic components of a community is. If our this is 1977, and all of those charges and all of those assumptions of responsibility have not been met, and therefore, thus leaving the state very vulnerable to internal attacks. And although that it is beneficial to another segment of the community called lawyers, that the dislocation of disparity of service still is intolerable. And with equal access and to arrive at parity, then I see that if this type of dislocation further occurs, that I see a disintegration of Alaskan society, not just native, but total disintegration of heavy regionalism. And regionalism occurs structurally because of numbers, because of the nature of administration for the public good gets executed in that fashion, because there is no proprietary relationship. If you have proprietary relationship in equity, you will have justice. I cannot speak for the Northwest. I can speak for what we see in the Arctic. And I see the chances of international development in Alaska. Not because of Alaska's resources. The state of Alaska has under-examined its strategic location in the universe. That the state of Alaska is in a probably the best transportation location. And let's examine the strategic positioning of international trade and put Alaska and the Arctic Ocean. If we were, say, I would propose, for the sake of a conversation, say that I am now going into a submarine transportation business, nuclear subs with very large capacity.
Maybe all I need is 20.
The 21 day savings, 21 day transportation cost of closing the gap within the Pacific Ocean, the value of Alaska's position in international commerce, and the lack of facilitating the hookup. What happened in Alaska in 1951 was revolutionized the whole commerce of the world. What happened in Alaska in 1951 was the first SAS transpolar flight occurred. Overnight, that they saved 22 hours of flying time all over the world. That instead of 26 at that time, that they made it to 11 hours with supercontinent. And when you put this, instead of Alaska, he's already in the transportation business. And when you take a look at the marine development, our potential as I see it in Alaska is not so much the land, but our estuaries. The greatest breadbasket in the world, if we were to keep our estuaries halfway clean, halfway decent, is Alaska in the protein business. And being and the scale, the present archaic scale of how we used to view Alaska and how it's presently viewed at this time is totally unacceptable. We must develop a psychology for who we are, where we're from, and instead of Alaska, as I see it at this time, have and can get into an international commerce, an international trade of not going through Panama, not crossing the Atlantic Ocean, not crossing the Pacific Ocean, not crossing the Indian Ocean, but crossing our own ocean where it cuts down traffic as long as 20. And this 23 days saving is sufficient capital savings in these 23 days to go into that type of development. But in terms of our community, that the citizen in the street must become an owner to a community-based infrastructure. And I feel that by getting these numbers, you know, we play a numbers game. We all have a bad habit of that. And it has a lot of limitations. And what State of Alaska needs at this time is an actuarial analysis of its citizens. And with an actuarial analysis, we will learn from this incidence of disease, standard of care, where our community vulnerabilities are. And as we have healthy people, we will also have healthy economy. If your people are sick, if your citizens are sick, your economy will also models which I feel which should be looked at is amazingly well, is Hydro-Quebec. Hydro-Quebec is the world's largest utility company. And I would like to see State of Alaska come into that class of proprietorship, of selling power to the world. And Hydro-Quebec is so successful that it can finance a government. And it is an only situation where I know that signs a bond of a government than the government signing a bond for Hydro-Quebec. And so when a state that is already in the business, if they really want to become the Hydro-Quebec model is very good on our oil and gas activity. A POGO leasing model is very good, and that's a financing technique where investors are pooled. Like you and I can pool our monies together and get it out of continental shelf, please. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but it is a direct way where a non-technical developer can get into oil and gas business without buying any rigs, without buying unnecessary overhead. But that's
we have access to the two options.
I don't know. I can make them available to the community, to the committee. I don't have them here with me. I will. I've got them at Harvard, so I'll be going back probably on the 24th.
And then our staff be able to acquire through you? Or?
Sure, yes. And the another model that is quite interesting is U.S. Steel in Ontario. Why that is interesting is U.S. Steel provides them the coal, and Ontario provides power to U.S. Steel. It is a very interesting model in terms of financing large-scale mining activity and also financing power. So, Ontario and U.S. Steel financing technique has a lot of flexibilities. It warrants attention, and Ontario and U.S. Steel are in the power business, and it may work very well in the state because there are some areas where there is not coal. And mining industry, as we all know, is well. And one of the things in one of the bad policies, we have a lot of bad habits in our government. We have become practitioners of bad habits. And especially in large-scale energy development sites, you know, we have a psychological problem that we must take something to the community. And the best type of development, as I see it, is at the resource. At the resource. and not taking the community there. And which I was happy that to hear that it was realized by Fairbanks that the community infrastructure, the social governmental capital to provide sewer and water was more expensive than all of the total capitalization for a plant. That the secondary community infrastructure got burdened, and it still will be burdened. State legislature will still have to pump in more sewer and water. And this is why that I always suspect portfolio managers, the alarm, and I always suspect bankers. And so, if I was in the state legislature, man, I'd go after the power the governor has and vested in the people, vested in the state legislature. That is probably the most significant fact that the Permanent Committee Fund can have, is to have a portfolio run by citizens that do not have loyalties to prior practice. That the chances of an investment banker being loyal, that his chances of loyalty will not change, but will have an expeditious intercourse with that former. And I feel which in Alaska has proven itself to be continuing practice, and I have not seen it cease to exist at this time, but now that I see, maybe instead of what used to be four people, now it's 12.
Yeah, it's lunchtime. Josh is about to talk to us at 1:30. George, would you like to talk to us in a second at all? Then we're going to meet at 1:30. Josh is going to talk to us. I want to hear from Terry. Finish up, I'd like to talk about the parameters of our graphic. Oh, yeah. large boat. Right, it's not a boat, it's a large ship. It's just a 1,000-foot vessel.
Right, okay, I see.
Then you're not going to have any trouble financing that on a 30-year basis.
Right. Okay.
Why is the problem with really being that pleasant and familiar with the resources? Set up something that can do all these good things. So how does the legislature or any elected official begin policy? Well, the final section of this paper devotes itself wholly to that question. And there are, first of all, I think it is very important to say that although there is all the technical capability available to control development banks, the record on a worldwide basis stinks. That they have not been held accountable on a general basis. That's right. There are four issues. There's the issue of who sets the goals and by what process are they set. There is the issue of reporting in terms of audit. There is the issue in terms of day-to-day management and the role of the executive, the legislature, and the user constituents. And the financial community in that day-to-day operation. And then finally, the issue of sanctions. And there are two critical sanctions. There's the sanction of cutting off the dollars, and there's the sanction of cutting off the heads of the managers. And again, I think in going through each of these different models, one can see how that there is a section in this region. In addition to the final section that looks more broadly at this question, there is a section on accountability and governance in every one of these. How are these questions dealt with by these institutions? I think at some point I can offer quickly some important kind of benchmarks.
I just want to get the four again. I know they're listed in your report, but who sets the goals and how, and the reporting and the day-to-day management, is there another one?
Yeah, sanctions. Sanctions over money and sanctions over management.
Thank you.
There are benchmarks. One benchmark is for the legislature to authorize an initial capitalization large enough to allow a several-year development time frame, but small enough so that if the funds have been improperly managed during that period of time, not that much relative to the total has been lost. And if they have been successfully implemented, employed, then it is necessary to return to the legislature for further authorization to increase the activity. That's a very important one. Let's go through each of the four. In terms of goals, that is a political decision, and one which has to be made by the body most accountable for making political decisions, that is the legislature. And it is critical that the findings of need and the purposes of the development function of the permanent fund and the renewable resources fund be relatively rigorously defined. So that it is clear what kinds of activities are not secondly, certainly to the extent that there is any subsidy, quite apart from the fact that there is a constitutional prohibition against the permanent fund making anything other than an income-producing investment, it is critical that any subsidies that are necessary to carry out a particular purpose of the primary fund be directly authorized and appropriated from the general fund by the legislature to the development banking function of the primary fund. You really have two approaches. One, you either have a capital subsidy or you have an operating subsidy. And what your measure is the difference between your definition of income, whatever the definition.
high standards of performance and corporate attention.
But didn't you say that those funds were so conservative that they weren't making very good returns?
I said that in terms of the real standard of the market was that they had something called indexing, which means that you put all your money into standard rewards and try not to do worse than the market. There is a standard. There's a good standard. Now, the constitutional standard it would appear, and I'm not making, obviously, this is, it looks to me as if that it's possible to have two standards that meet that when you live within the Constitution, the standard for the trust function and the standard for the development function. And they would both be income producing, but the development function would be less income producing than the trust function, which is different from a direct subsidy from the general fund. Now, to point out, and obviously, the time we have today, going into very detail wouldn't be very, I suspect it wouldn't be very efficient, but to give you a precise example, the National Enterprise Board, which is a major government-owned holding company in England, owns Rolls-Royce, owns British Leyland, and lots of other British industry. That particular institution has very rigorous standards of accountability. It's unique in that respect. And any subsidies that come into it must come in according to the mechanism of which is the correct authorization and appropriation from and it keeps things clean, which I think is really critical. Okay. Now, reporting, the second point, reporting. Reporting has a tremendous function in terms of accountability and in terms of the accountability as to whether or not the goals are met. Now, there are two issues of reporting. One issue of reporting is simply financial returns on investment. T-value acute one because of the constitutional requirement that you're producing. But the other measure of reporting is economic benefit. Now, we have available to us all the techniques we need in terms of financial auditing, in terms of auditing a financial return. There is a tendency in development banks not to use those standards, not to hold the development bank to the highest standards of public corporate financial accounting. And it's critical that that mistake not be made. That's an easy one. Let me just tell you what I mean. For instance, if a development bank is given the elbow, there inevitably will be all kinds of cross-subsidization that are going on inside the fund, which are not apparent to voters, the legislature, and the executive.
This is part of the loans.
Yes, yeah. But this is just covering a bad deal.
In the reporting of it.
In the reporting.
Because you're not using those rigorous standards that
right.
could happen.
That's right. Okay. Now, secondly, in terms of the question of economic accounting, and I incidentally was surprised to find that a quite good paper of Tom Singer's and John Mullen comes together has not been circulated. I think that's a mistake. It's a paper of last May. And I don't know what you're doing with it, Tom, but anyway, yeah, I have. Which touches
I love. I think is that the one you gave me copy of?
No, I really finished it for a while. We didn't have a lot of unfortunately, on a worldwide basis, the standards for auditing economic impact, that is a non-financial accounting, is really not very well developed. And there's some now important experiments going on with the Community Development Finance Corporation in Massachusetts, but they're just in the process of being developed.
And an example of what you mean by economic.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I'll take a minute to just describe what is being developed in Massachusetts. two-track is a dual accounting system that will run all the way through the life of the institution. When projects come to the board for approval or disapproval, there must be projections of both the financial viability of the enterprise and the economic viability of the enterprise. Meaning specifically, a projection of new jobs or increase in income of jobs that will be produced. A projection in terms of the for instance, the welfare costs and the unemployment insurance costs that will be saved to the state. A projection of tax revenues that will be provided to the state by this particular venture. And a series of findings in terms of whether or not the economic impact of this investment warrants the investment, as well as whether or not the financial soundness of the investment warrants the investment.
It is our justification.
Well, that's the point, is that these projections have to be made in the beginning. And then there is auditing of those projections, just as there is auditing of the financial projections. At the end of the year, if you meet those projections in terms of job creation, if you meet those projections in terms of...
And that tells you how good the board is doing in its projections.
That's right. Now, this is pathfinding. I mean, other than the fact that the World Bank and the Interactive Development Bank have developed pretty rigorous cost-benefit studies, which are quite expensive, this is a fairly good development. But it is, Cooper's and Lybrand is working on this in Massachusetts at the present time, and by the time you're ready for it, there'll be some more advancement of the state of the art in the present time. There are present time for
the ones that the university computers there.
Yeah.
Accounting firms vary. There's an even city in terms of their competence, enormously.
But the use of the formal accounting reporting is pretty obvious, I think, but the economic reporting, that's a much larger consideration. In fact, in a sense, the return to the investment, the actual return to the fund is just sort of a subset of that larger consideration, isn't that right?
That's right.
But what do you use that economic reporting for? You may well say
that, looking at a cost-benefit study, that the add-on public costs of bringing a petrochemical industry to Fairbanks, in terms of increased sewage, schools, etc., far exceeds the tax benefits that are going to come to the state and the borough through that investment.
But you require these projections when they're initially considering the investment.
That's right.
But do you require that the board consider that it meets the test, that it's a positive return in both cases?
There must be a finding that it's both financially sound and economically sound.
I see. So that's your requirement. Then you check on how accurate they were afterwards by having the post on.
Okay. To move on, in terms of day-to-day operations, those are basically issues of structuring the board. I think, for instance, that it is critical that there be a balance on the board between members of government, members of the financial community, and users. And that the constituency of users need to be reflected directly in the institution. How do you define users?
Yeah.
Well, users would be, I mean, depending on what the goals are, users would be small business people, renewable resource people, foresters, fisher bristles, members of regional development corporations, for example. The critical issue is sanctions. And the legislature must retain, in order to carry out its functions, the executive must retain, to various degrees, sanctions over dollars and management. And the issue of dollar sanction, it seems to me, is one of the two capitalization sufficient to permit a track record, but not sufficient to prevent running away from the track. And two, control over the subsidy. And I think that there's another dimension of this, which there's a striking difference between 298 and 300, which should be made even more striking in the end. And that is that in 298, the fund managers only need to be available to meet with the legislature if called. 300 corrects that in a very important way and requires that there be an annual report and review with an appropriate legislative committee. I would suggest that instinct be taken several steps further, and that there be a requirement for a plan from permanent fund management, from the development bank management, which is, depending on one's sense of the appropriate time, you know, a 3-year or 5-year plan, something of that sort, which again, Russ, provides for a financial plan and an economic plan, financial targets and economic targets, in different geographical, on a regional basis and a functional basis throughout the state. And then, this year's plan is reported on in terms of how well those projections were met by the fund managers on an overall basis. And I think it is possible to write in some reasonable review and approval standards in terms of the legislature, in terms of broad goals. What's an issue is to have the day-to-day efficiency of the development bank managers making prudent investment judgments, but not to give them the power to set their own goals and to reserve to the executive and the legislature that power.
Would you think it would be a wise idea to specify what powers a committee might have in obtaining information, any information that it wishes from the development bank?
Oh, absolutely.
Rather than just saying, report to us what you want to report to us. So that if you get into one of those situations downstream 20 years where you've got a CIA-type organization.
No, I'm quite concerned what you do after. You might have it screwed up. What do you do? Well, okay. It seems to me that there... I understand that this is a constitutional issue, and I'm just aware of that is a fact, but it seems to me that it is absolutely critical from a policy standpoint, as opposed to whatever your audience is reasoning, that there is the power of advice and consent by the legislature with regard to who those fund managers are.
Well, that they would pick.
Well, that they have terms, and that therefore there's at least a review. But other than proven malfeasance, I think that there's a very important issue with regard to the general manager. And the best proven experience with regard to the general manager is the person to hold accountable for that is the chief executive of the government. Yeah. Right. Now that is the experience in other settings.
Say that again, please.
That the person to be held responsible for the general manager is the legislature has a great deal of ability to keep the spotlight on the institution and on the individual, and to review and establish basic goals.
I assume you're saying that in order to make sure you, well, one of the things that you need to do if you're attempting to get competent and also honest managers, you need to pay them very well. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. You've got. I mean, there's no question that you've got to pay world market.
Which is what?
Well, I don't know. What's the governor going to pay for this?
$50,000.
Well, you start there. It's going to be substantial. This person is going to make more than the governor.
Very well. I'll make more than 18,000.
Yeah, the governor isn't our highest paid state employee.
Jim, you said best man.
I say that the governor should be the one who has the ability to can the general manager.
Why not a legislative committee?
Why not a legislative committee? All I can say is that I don't know of any circumstances where that's been done elsewhere. And I'm bound by the experience that is available to me.
Well, let me use an example. You put the commissioner of revenue the way we have just our general fund money today. Am I on the right track? And he's selected by the governor with approval of the legislature. And he's the guy that invests the money. And the kind of a job he does with it, you know. I play the stock market too, you know. I'm just talking about investments in general. Anybody can. Hindsight is better than foresight, doesn't it? In most cases, depending on how you want to handle this guy. Just relating to what happened in the last 10 years when we got into the common stock market and the fury that was raised about that. And they forced the Commissioner of Revenue to get rid of him, and I don't know what he's got left. It's all gone. But if you would have had that money in your hand, I could say with hindsight too, some of the things that the state revenue department hung on to, lots of guys in the private investment field dumped long before they did.
I think that would be a good case in point. I want to be careful because I don't know very much about the situation, but it is my impression that there was a situation in which there are not clearly established standards. Against which the performance of that executive is held accountable.
Well, prior to this individual, there was a feeling in the legislature, at least among those that were in the finance committee, and I think the general public feels too, that this fellow shouldn't be investing in the common stock area. He should be playing in 100% guaranteed money like government notes and things like that, which, I mean, that's a safe route to go. Well, yes, but then the same fellow might run up against the wall and have a bad day, and the whole legislature's on his back, and the governor will say, well, that SOB, get rid of it. Make one mistake, you know.
As Harold Pomeroy well said in the Anchorage hearings, the moment that the oil was taken out of the ground, the last thing you began losing their shirts on. That principle is losing value by the minute. And in terms of the trust function, in any event, it seems to be the issue is slowing the rate at which the value of that principle is decreasing.
But at the same time, the other fellow that testified along the same line would say, just take a look around and see what they really did provide for the human needs, or, you know.
Oh, I agree with that.
Somewhere is what we're talking about. We've got to get in a middle ground somewhere.
That covers the essential points on accountability. And I don't know. I think in terms of the regional issue, there is every option available in the book in terms of models for regionalizing. And I think the key point is what is the appropriate, from a practical management standpoint in Alaska, what is the appropriate kind of regionalization that's for the fund? And that's a judgment call that can only be made by people who are sensitive to this particular political economy. And if you haven't decided on it, it's very easy then to say, okay, we've got to operate on the screens for you. So I don't think there's too much point in it.
What are your more important
concerns? best of my managers are going to be senior ranks of the largest banks and banks in various countries. And they are highly successful in being financial targets, but we can take these people, take them with a set of values too. And they're ordered to meet social problems. And that's an unemployment in X region and so on.
Yes, that is really the serious problem, that you're going to get good financial people. But the likelihood of getting people who understand the social side of the balance sheet is probably going to be not only far less, but may even be almost non-existent. The issue is really that's why you're doing this. That's why you have the development function. And that's why the legislatures have played such an active role in terms of establishing goals and monitoring. I think one has to just accept that that's the likely kind of person you're going to get, and then just be very damn sure that the goal setting, reporting, public spotlight mechanisms are very rigorous, and that person knows that they're going to be held to a very rigorous post audit in terms of. Do I say that right?
Yeah. One side.
Okay. Anybody has a question?
It seems to me one of the great problems with having social goals for development bank is that the legislature and the people that are actually operating on these goals can't be given skewer. Take, for example, this our existing loan program. Say, agriculture is 6%. There's no one here who actually made a very costly study to find out how much subsidy was given to what individuals and whether or not the subsidy attained the goals that people had, or even vaguely in mind the time for them to sit down. The whole thing is, I think, lost outside.
Your one rank, if they're not obscure, there never was any. Nobody ever wrote it down.
What?
So you can't even attempt to measure because nobody ever agreed with the numbers.
But with agriculture, you can say, what happened?
Well, was it? I don't know. Maybe it was the subsidized. No, maybe it wasn't.
What was there? Seemed to have been at least some vague general goals.
It was
a
little
never right. And that's why the Pricewaterhouse, for example, was very much in favor of the idea of subsidy being open and voted, so you know which bank subsidy, how much, and who wants it to have.
Yeah, I share
what purpose
I share that, Rachel. I also think it is possible, and unfortunately, one of the institutions that I chose to report on here, I created, so you have to take anything that I said about it with a grain of salt. And that is the Community Development Finance Corporation. That institution, in my humble judgment, is one of the few development banks that ever was very precise in defining its goals according to a specific set of found financial needs, and then structuring itself to be responsible for those goals. Now the institution is just developing, so we don't have the benefit of knowing whether or not it's screwed up too.
One more illustration. For example, if the goal is stated in enabling act to enhance employment opportunities for Alaska. Well, from an economist's point of view, you can make no net gain for people who are residents of Alaska unless they
get. Excuse me, Charlie, do you want to talk to us at all?
Well, I just
no, can you do it now? Because no. We really want to hear.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's come up to the table. Folks this morning, we're not having to do anything. We're in our philosophy.
The basic point of development in Alaska or any other place in the world is that somebody has always had to finance it, wherever that source came from. And all the way through development of man, especially Western man, the only thing which did not change, even when you went to war, was the financial arrangements that were made at the time that war had commenced. The victor always had the financial institutions with him. And what does this have to do with state of Alaska? It has a lot to do with it. For the simple fact that prior accumulation and prior savings have vested in certain individuals in Alaska, whether we like it or not. And the opportunity here that the state of Alaska has is not so much who is going to be a manager of this portfolio, but how is the citizen going to have a role into the financial infrastructure of his citizenship. And this basically means is what types of assets will the citizen have. It says, although that the standard of care and the standard of conduct for according and recording, I feel at this time is quite sufficient if you were to use a 10K statement. And the thing that I would recommend very heavily is the simplicity of a financial statement, not its complexity. And when the history repeats itself more than once, and it has its own weight and own inertia, and when you look at society, it says, who does the public take care of? And in the past, our history of our welfare program in this country emerged from communities. That it was communities that took care of eleemosynary functions. And then cities, and then they finally went to a state program. And the most important thing, and the potential that state of Alaska has is are we at a political development in time where capitalism can be a birthright? Or are we going to selectively, through regulation, discriminate and create a social elitist managerial class in this state? And the dynamics of the corporation as a tool are, and still is, probably the most creative tool that is available to man at this time. And the success of our capital engine in the state of Alaska will depend upon accessibility to the citizens. And how does one arrive at this point? Is the state legislature at this time is responsible for the administration of the public good to all of its citizens. What is the meaning of public good? The meaning of public good means that you have a public manager. Although that public manager may be at fault in realignment of the economy by the political process, best friends and best relatives, is how our political economy in America has been functioning. Today, that is no longer an acceptable mode. And the gap in America, although that we have recognized that there is poverty, but how does one get into that state of mind, state of consciousness, which is totally intolerant? The way that it has arrived in the past is that in an aggregate organized society, imperatively coordinated, that those that have the ability to be organized, to get organized, always come into par with the rest of society. And not only do we see poverty of the mind in rural Alaska, but poverty of organization. And the state of Alaska at this time is one hell of a underdeveloped organization. We are charged with great legal responsibility and obligation. Yet, we fail to give to our citizens the basic desires, basic needs. And how does this affect our citizens? That the thing that is most pronounced is a very archaic administration of very few groups of people in Alaska regulating the conduct of enterprise. And not only do we have constitutional problems, but in order for our citizens to be fully endowed, this endowment must come from the constitutional genesis of the people of the state of Alaska. The present wealth of state of Alaska is being handled haphazardly in a disguise of public good. That if an ex-corporation can lease an ex areas of land, that the loss, significant loss, has already occurred when ownership of the citizens get wasted to field-friendly corporations. And in order for the permanent fund, I feel, to be successful in Alaska, that the citizens that it's supposed to serve must have a proprietary relationship to the fund. That not only must the governor be accountable, but all of its managers must be accountable to all of its citizens, not just on the elitist managerial class who may be able to shuffle the paper and foster more intolerable situations called corporate fascism in the state. The responsibility and the opportunity to develop a portfolio of citizens with a capitalistic class, a capitalistic mode. And what we have done 200 years ago is no longer self-sufficient. That we must extend this greater right to capital to all of our citizens and accept the total portfolio of the state. That whatever gets appropriated in the name of the public good must also have a proprietary class, meaning ownership, a direct ownership to that community, to that citizen at that village of Anchorage, so that the citizen of Alaska will have a direct law of acquiring capital, even though that it may be on improvements in the community. And how does one create an administration for this? And the first form of creativity, America is quite rudiment in its capital financing development. We have not had a change because the only experience that one follows throughout the world has been a multinational bank. The banking model, I feel, is so tyrannical that that it leaves us great gaps, leaves humanity and great masses behind. Therefore, that it is very hard to build the American image elsewhere throughout the world. The permanent fund in Alaska must have a character of a community. A community, not few elitist managers who are saying, we will now do it for you. And this growth and this evolution, if you take a total fabric of the community in Alaska, the highest cost of any administration in Alaska is energy development. If we worry about what we are going to do about our natural resources, when is the state legislature or a would-be governor going to treat its citizens as a producer, not as a beggar? And not until that we are able to give a full disclosure of all of our citizens in relationship to capital using instruments by a constitutional convention, the present underclass society